If you'd like to follow along with the reading, it's going to be from Mark 8, verses 1 through 9. Mark 8, verses 1 through 9. In those days, the multitude being very great and having nothing to eat, Jesus called his disciples to him and said to them, I have compassion on the multitude, because they have now continued with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. And if I send them away hungry to their own houses, they will faint on the way, for some of them have come from afar. Then his disciples answered him, How can one satisfy these people with bread here in the wilderness? And he asked them, How many loaves do you have? And they said, 7. So he commanded the multitude to sit down on the ground, and he took the 7 loaves, and he gave thanks, broke them, and gave them to his disciples to set before them. And they set them before the multitude. They also had a few small fish, and having blessed them, he said to set them also before them. So they ate and were filled, and they took up 7 large baskets of leftover fragments. Now those who had eaten were about 4,000, and he sent them away.
Well, good morning. We have been considering questions that Jesus asked his disciples and us. And the question for us this morning is found here in this same passage in Mark chapter 8. It concerns, of course, the feeding of the 4,000 and the feeding of the 5,000, which is recorded in John chapter 6. In Mark chapter 8 here, and beginning in verse 16, we read they began to discuss with one another the fact they had no bread. And Jesus, aware of this, said to them, Why do you discuss the fact that you have no bread? Do you not yet see or understand? Do you have a hardened heart? Having eyes, do you not see? Having ears, do you not hear? And do you not remember when I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000, how many baskets full of broken pieces you picked up? And they said to him, 12. And when I broke the 7 for the 4,000, how many large baskets full of broken pieces did you pick up? And they said to him, 7. And he was saying to them, Do you not yet understand? Jesus had fed the 5,000 and the 4,000 with only a few loaves and fishes. And now here the disciples are in a boat without enough bread for themselves. And they begin to discuss, where are we going to get bread? And Jesus says, Don't you understand yet? Have you not figured it out yet? Specifically, he asked them this question. How many baskets full of broken pieces did you pick up? How many baskets full did you pick up after everyone had eaten? 5,008 of just 5 loaves and 2 fishes. 4,008, just 7 loaves and a few small fishes. Have you not figured it out yet? I want to see if we can figure it out this morning and consider what it is that he is trying to get them to think about when he asks this question. Have you not figured it out yet? Don't you remember how many baskets of leftovers you picked up? In John chapter 6, where we have a recording of the 5,000 being fed, there are 4 people that I want us to think about and what they learned or didn't learn from this occasion when he fed the 5,000. First of all, I want us to think about the idea of Philip. In John chapter 6, we see something more specifically about Philip, one of the apostles. And Jesus turns in John chapter 6 to Philip, and he says to him in John chapter 6 and in verse 5, Where are we to buy bread so that these people may eat? And then John records this in verse 6. This he was saying to test him, for he himself knew what he was intending to do. That Philip answered him then and says, 200 denarii worth of bread is not sufficient for them, for everyone who received just a little. And we get some sense of the way in which Philip views the world and the sense in which he thinks about this particular incident. That is, Philip is a counting man. I don't know exactly what his profession was, but I do know something about this attitude that he has toward life, because it's something of my attitude toward life. Counting things is kind of a way to feel like you have control and a sense of knowing how things are supposed to work out. So he's counted this up. And he has already figured it out, and he says to Jesus, with perhaps a sense of desperation in his voice, 200 denarii are not going to be enough to give them all just a little bit. I don't know exactly what kind of process he had gone through to figure this out, but it is a sense in which he looks at a world with limited possibilities, that there is just so much in the world, and you can only do so much with what you have, and it's going to be limited. I often like to think of myself as a defensive pessimist. That is, you anticipate the problems ahead of time so that you're not disappointed when they arise, or so maybe you might even be able to get around them a little bit and take care of the problems before they arise. Frequently, of course, what I find is that I am dealing with problems that never do arise because I've anticipated them too much. Philip is thinking in terms of the cost. How much is it that we're going to have to pay in order to feed these people? And Jesus understands something of his character, and he's turned to him and he's tested him, and Jesus knows exactly what he's going to do. He doesn't really need a dollar figure. He would like something more out of Philip than just this kind of limited possibility world, counting up how much it's going to cost to feed these people. But he has a sense of prudence, I suppose, from the point of view of many people in the world. Certainly from my point of view, it's like, yeah, we should probably count the cost. We should try and figure it out. We should probably anticipate the problems. We never should have gone out into the wilderness with not enough food anyway. I'm a little surprised that later on in Mark chapter 8, Philip has gotten into the boat without thinking about the food anyway. But that's just the way it is in the world. Limited resources are available to us. And Philip understands that. And that's what he thinks about. But he's underestimated the power of God, as we so often do. We've been studying in the book of Ecclesiastes on Wednesday evening. And Ecclesiastes is really about exactly that issue. Under the sun, without taking God into consideration, what advantage do we have in all the work which we do? Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 3. Solomon in that book says, I set my mind to explore by wisdom what is best for a man in the world. And what he discovers in Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 14, I've seen all the works which have been done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and striving after wind. It is all vanity and striving after wind under the sun. If we don't take God into consideration, if we don't understand the power of God, then we are going to see nothing but vanity and emptiness and foolishness in the world. Philip is something like that. Here's Jesus in front of him. Here are the crowds and their need, and all he can see is the need. He can't see Jesus. He should have lifted up his eyes and looked to Jesus and figured out he's going to take care of the problems. That's why he's here. He didn't understand the power of God. Ephesians chapter 3 and verse 20, we are reminded in Ephesians 3 and verse 20 of Jesus that he's able to do far more abundantly beyond all that we ask or think according to the power that works within us. That there is no limit to what God can do in our lives, no limit to what Jesus is able to do. He came into the world to save men from their sins, and he accomplished exactly that. Philip is not able to think in terms of more than just a limited horizon of what money can buy. He doesn't really focus on Jesus and the resources that he has. Another person there is, we find there, in John chapter 6 and verse 8, and that is Andrew, Simon Peter's brother. And of course, a number of occasions we've considered together about Andrew being Peter's brother and what it must have been like to have been Peter's brother. But Andrew has his own character, and in some ways an admirable character as well as Peter's, but in a very different way. In John chapter 6 and verse 8, one of the disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There is a lad here who has five barley loaves and two fish, But what are these among so many people? In some ways, he is very different than Philip. Philip just starts counting and says, here's how big the problem is. Andrew looks and says, here's what we have. I don't know what we can do with it, but this is what we have, and he brought it to the Lord. He put it all in Jesus' hands, and he says, here, this is what I have found. And in some ways, it is a more trusting attitude than that is Philip. He is turning to Jesus and saying, this is what we have. I don't know what to do with it, but what can you do with it? We probably ought to be more like Andrew than we are like Peter, than we are like Philip. Philip, who's counting the cost and trying to get some control over things by counting cost. Andrew, on the other hand, who goes to God and said, this is what we've got. His prayer is, and our prayer ought to be, dear Lord, I don't know what good this is or what to do about this problem, but here it is, I'm turning it all over to you, and I am confident that you will be able to make something out of it. We need to have that attitude as opposed to the attitude of Philip. I've heard all my life people say, do your best and let God take care of the rest. And as much as I dislike those kinds of platitudes, particularly when they rhyme, nonetheless, that's pretty good advice. It is difficult advice for some of us to take. Maybe more difficult for Philip than it was for Andrew. But this is the kind of attitude that we ought to have concerning the difficulties that we face in our life. That it is Jesus who is here to take care of our problems. And here's what we have. I don't understand how this is going to work out, but I trust God to make it work out. Very different attitude about Philip and Andrew. I want to look at Jesus for just a moment as well. Jesus is there, and he is able, and he is willing to do what is necessary. John chapter 6 reminds us that he knew exactly what he was going to do. I don't know at what point he knew exactly what he was going to do. Maybe he knew what he was going to do when he led them out into the wilderness, and he saw all of those people following him out to the wilderness, and he led them out there for this very purpose, that he would provide for them out there. Maybe he knew that long before he ever set out across the Sea of Galilee, that this is one of the things that he was going to do. He certainly knew when he came into the world that he was going to provide for men. And provide he does. So he has them sit down, and he takes the few loaves and the two fishes, and he begins to break them. And as he breaks them and has them distribute them, they multiply in some miraculous way that provides for everyone. And then, in John chapter 6, and verse 12, he said to the disciples, gather up the leftover fragments so that nothing will be lost. So they gathered them up and filled 12 baskets with fragments from the 5 barley loaves which are left over by those who had eaten. Now the baskets, I always presume, were like wicker baskets. I'm not sure that's the kind of baskets that they were talking about. I think they were the kind of baskets that they wore, kind of leather pouches on their girdles. But nonetheless, it is impressive. The leftovers amounted to more than they started with. We always have a big deal about leftovers in our house. Not just Thanksgiving when you bake the big turkey, so you will have leftovers. But leftovers, you know, should be sometimes the best part of the meal, the leftovers. You don't want to waste that in the household where I grew up. And, you know, sometimes things just get better when you warm them up 2 or 3 times. But here's an amazing thing. The leftovers were more than what you started with. That's absolutely impossible. Of course, it was impossible that we had 2 fishes and 5 loaves to feed 5,000 people anyway. But just to emphasize the impossibility of that, he says to them, I want you to pick up the leftovers. Pick up the broken pieces. And they pick them up, and they have 12 of these baskets full. And you think, where in the world does all of this bounty come from? How is it that you have more left over after 5,000 people have eaten than you had when you began? And it's because you put it into Jesus' hands. In Jesus' hands, what seemed a little was more than enough. As I have said. A basketball in my hands, a really good basketball, is worth $50. In LeBron James' hand, a basketball is worth $40 million, apparently. A baseball bat in my hand is good for knocking out a wasp out of a nest. In Michael Stanton's hand, is worth over 100 RBIs a season. It depends on who is holding the resources of our life as to what we're going to be able to do with them. Sometimes we think that we are competent with the resources that we've been given, and maybe we have some kind of limited competence in some kinds of areas, but you just can't imagine what Jesus can do with the limited resources that we have in our lives or that we have in our congregation. 5 loaves and 2 fishes in any hands but Jesus is just 5 loaves and 2 fishes, a boy's lunch. But in the hands of Jesus, they become a feast for thousands, with more left over than they began with. We think sometimes that we are, and probably we're right, incompetent for the tasks that lie before us. Sometimes I wake up in the morning and I say, you know, let's count off all the things we have to do. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get all of that done. Think that way at the beginning of the semester here. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to get all of this done. I don't know why I didn't say no at 2 or 3 points along the line. And maybe I will and maybe I won't. But I know one thing, that Jesus is able to accomplish what needs to be accomplished in the world and in my life and in my day. We need to give more confidence to the fact that Jesus is here with us as we go through the day-to-day activities. It's not just Philip and Andrew and Jesus. There's the crowd there too. And they're the ones who are the beneficiaries of what Jesus has done. They're the ones who have been fed where there was not enough food to eat. Now, I don't think any of these people would have starved to death had Jesus not provided for them miraculously. They might have had an uncomfortable evening, an uncomfortable day the next day as they tried to get back to civilization where they could get something to eat. But they were no doubt glad to be able to eat. And maybe they were too pleased with the meal. I don't know. After all, it had cost them nothing. They had made no preparations. They had carried no food with them. And now, all of a sudden, miraculously, they've been fed. And my presumption is everybody had more than enough. One of the more satisfying meals that they had had. And maybe because it cost them nothing, that's why there were so many leftovers. 12 baskets that were left over. If they'd had to bring their own food, they might have been more concerned about the leftovers. They might have been more frugal with it. But I know this for sure, whether they appreciated the leftovers or whether they appreciated the meal that Jesus had given them, they didn't really see the real value of what it was that he had done for them, because they didn't see the real value of Jesus. They didn't see the real lesson to be learned from his providing this meal for them. Because it was never about bread. It was never about a meal. That's just an illustration of what his real gifts are for mankind. In John chapter 6, and in verse 14, we read something about the attitude of the crowd after Jesus has provided for them in this way. John 6 and verse 14, "Therefore, when the people saw the sign which he had performed, they said, 'This is truly the prophet who has come into the world.'" So Jesus, perceiving that they were intending to come and take him by force to make him king, withdrew again to the mountain by himself alone. And of course, it would be exciting to have a king who provides food for you as opposed to taking your taxes, but they really don't understand what Jesus' purpose is in the life. They don't understand why he's come into the world, and in some ways that indicates they don't understand what their purpose is in this world either. In John chapter 6 and verse 26, when they catch up with Jesus, he says this to them, John 6 and verse 26. "Truly I say to you, seek me, not because you saw signs, but because you ate of the loaves and were filled. Do not work for the food which perishes, but for the food which endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give to you, for on him the Father has set his seal. It was not about the bread. It was about something else bigger than just bread. It was not about their physical lives. It was about something bigger than that. In John 6 and verse 32, Jesus said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, it is not Moses who has given you the bread out of heaven, but it is my Father who gives you the true bread out of heaven. For the bread of God is that which comes down out of heaven and gives life to the world." And they said to him, "Lord, then give us this bread." And Jesus said to them, "I am the bread of life, and he who comes to me will not hunger, and he who believes in me will never thirst." Here's the thing they didn't understand, and sometimes maybe we miss out on as well. Jesus performed miracles while he was here on the face of the earth. He performed miracles of healing in which he made the blind to see. He performed miracles in which he made the lame to walk. He performed miracles in which he made the dead to rise up again to life. He performed miracles in which he gave them bread. But all of those things were really only illustrations of the real miracle that he came into the world to perform. That is, that he wanted people not only to be able to walk, but he wanted them to be able to walk in the Lord. He wanted them not only to be able to see, he wanted them to be able to see the truth, the eternal things. He wanted them not only to be able to live the short span of life that we live here below, but he wanted them to live spiritually and eternally. He wanted them not only to be able to eat for a day, he wanted them to be nourished for spiritual life for eternity. We may feel sometimes, as we get caught up in this life, that our primary need is something physical. That our need is, and we pray so frequently about that, for physical healing, or for financial relief, or for some of the things that we're missing out on, we think, in this life. And there is no doubt that Jesus cares about those kinds of things. When he looked at the crowds and he saw they were hungry, he felt compassion for them. And he did something about it. He says he knows the hairs on our head, they are numbered, and he knows about those things. But here's the amazing thing. Jesus not only knows about the needs that we know about, the physical needs that we have, but he knows something more about the deeper needs of our lives. He knows about the things that really are resonating inside of our hearts and our souls. He knows about our weaknesses and feelings of insecurity and our feelings of worthlessness and our guilt and our shame. More than that, he knows the solution to all of those problems is not in terms of more money or more health or more food, but the solution to those problems is being reconciled to God, and that requires forgiveness. And he was trying to lead all of these people and us as well to understand that just as surely as he could provide food for 5,000 people out of just a few loaves and fishes, just as surely as he could provide for 4,000 large crowds out of just a small amount, that he has the power to provide for us the needs that we don't even really know that we have. The solution to all of our problems, to give us not just life, but life abundant, and not just physical life for a short while, but spiritual life for eternity, and not just a meal that will satisfy us for a few hours, but the kind of spiritual nourishment that will satisfy us forever. And here's the thing that he wanted them to learn about that, and wanted the apostles to learn as we come back to Mark chapter 8, that there was plenty left over. In Mark chapter 8, when he comes back and refers to this incident again, as the disciples are worried about bread, he says, "Don't you remember that?" And he asked them specifically about the leftovers. "Don't you remember how many baskets you picked up? 12 baskets on one occasion, 7 baskets on another occasion." They didn't understand the meaning of the leftovers. Two lessons, I think, that he wanted them to have learned from that. One, and maybe the less important of those, is that he's going to take care of them as they take care of other people. Because he's going to send them out into the world. As he describes it on other occasions, he's going to send them out, you know, as among serpents and as among lions and as among wolves. They are going to suffer in many ways as they preach the gospel. But as he sends them out, he's going to take care of them. It's interesting to think about those leftovers. On one occasion, 12 baskets. He says, how many baskets? 12 baskets. And on the other occasion, 7 baskets. Those are not just random numbers. I mean, if it had been, 11 and a half baskets that they had picked up, that would have been like just kind of reasonable to just a number. But that it's 12 baskets on one occasion and 7 on the other. Those are pretty specific kinds of numbers in the Bible. 12, of course, almost always stands for the 12 tribes of Israel, the completeness of God's people. And 7 is a number that suggests in and of itself just completeness, a totality, 7 days in a week. There's this interesting kind of fact that he does this miracle twice. Of course, he healed a number of people of blindness. He healed a number of people who were lame. But he does this pretty specific miracle of feeding people, the crowds, in the wilderness twice. So much so that there are some of the critical scholars who tried to say this is really the same incident, they just got the numbers confused. But no, it's pretty clearly two separate instances. And Jesus points it out here in Mark chapter 8. He says, don't you remember when I fed the 5,000 and when I fed the 4,000? And how many baskets did you pick up when I fed the 5,000? How many baskets did you pick up when I fed the 4,000? Well, there were 12 on one occasion, there were 7 on the other. Don't you yet understand, he says. 12 apostles, 12 baskets. They're worried about bread. And he says, don't you understand? You don't have to worry about bread when you're with me. You don't have to worry about the storm on the sea when you're with me. You don't have to worry, he says to them later, when I send you out and you stand before the tribunals and are accused of preaching the gospel or whatever other things they're going to accuse you of. You don't have to worry about that because I'll give you the words to speak on those occasions. Don't you understand? I'm going to take care of you. They did not remember that Jesus was with them. And they were worried about the bread. And he says, don't you remember the leftovers? There's plenty. And I'm going to take care of you. My grace is sufficient for you. But maybe a bigger lesson than all of that is the abundance of Jesus' sacrifice. Because this whole miracle is never just about bread. Any more than the miracles of healing were never just about making somebody's life better by healing their broken body. It is about what Jesus' purpose was in coming into the world. In John chapter 6 and verse 35, Jesus said to those crowds as they looked at the bread and they said, you know, we want you to be king. We want you to provide bread for us on a daily basis. John 6, verse 35, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me will not hunger, and he who believes in me will not thirst. John 6 and verse 48, I am the bread of life. This is the bread of life. John 6 and verse 51, I am the bread of life that came down of heaven. Anyone who eats of this bread, he will live forever. There's no limit here on what Jesus can do in terms of bread. But the amazing thing is not that it's the bread that he provides, but it is the bread of life that he provides. It is the bread of life and life abundant that he provides. It is a reconciliation with God. It is forgiveness of sins. It is renewal of life. It is eternal life that he came to provide. And there is no limit to how much salvation he can provide. There's no limit to how many people he can save. There's no limit to the depravity from which he can save a person. In the one case, 12 baskets were left over. And in the other case, 7 baskets were left over. Completeness. There's a totality and a sufficiency even after they've all had enough. The leftovers focus our attention even more on the miracle of the feeding of the thousands than the sufficiency of Jesus. It would have been enough. And in the wisdom of God, he could have just provided just enough for everybody to eat and be filled and nothing left over. And we could have talked about a lesson of, you know, don't worry about tomorrow. Sufficient to the day is the evil thereof. But he provides for them a sufficiency and then a leftover that is in some ways a measure of completeness too. Nobody should ever doubt that God is able to save them any more than they should doubt that he could have fed 6,000 or 10,000 or 20,000 people had that been the necessity or the purpose for which he'd come into the world. He can save anyone. Jesus' blood is sufficient for salvation for however many come to him. Don't you yet understand, he asked the disciples, and I'm sure by now they do, that his grace is sufficient for us. 2 Corinthians 12 and verse 9, he makes that specific point to Paul, who is in the midst of his service to the church and wondering if God's going to take care of him. And in 2 Corinthians 12 and verse 9, he says to him, "My grace is sufficient for you. My power is perfected in weakness." And Paul says, "Most gladly, therefore, I will boast about my weakness so that the power of Christ may dwell in me." And in some ways, he emphasizes that. I was the chiefest of sinners, he says, and yet God saved me through Jesus Christ. If God could save me, Paul says, as he preaches, he can save you. We may say, like Philip sometimes, what is so little among so many? Or like the one talent man, what good are my few talents or my few years in the service of the kingdom? But we ought to be more like Andrew and just give them to God, give them to Jesus, and see what he can do with those things. We may say, as do the apostles sometimes, "Oh no, we've forgotten bread again." But don't you know that we are with Jesus and that he will take care of us? There is a sense in which we ought not to fret because he's provided more than enough for us. But again, when we think about the issues of whether he will get us through some financial difficulty or physical ailments, that's not the main point. That's trivial. The real focus is on life and life abundant and not just on feeding the body. Some people may say, "You know, my sins are too great. There is no way that God could ever forgive me." But our God is able to do that. We sing the song sometimes as the grandest theme through the ages rung, the grandest theme for a mortal tongue, the grandest theme that the world ever sung. Our God is able to deliver us. Look at what Jesus was able to do. In his hands, 5 loaves were more than sufficient to feed the 5,000, and our innumerable blessings are sufficient for us in the hands of Jesus. We should never doubt that he is able to save us. No matter how many times we may have erred, and how many times we may have sinned, and how many times we may have fallen into the same kind of temptation, that he is faithful to forgive us our sins when we confess them. Have you not yet understood how many baskets were left over after he fed the 5,000 and after he fed the 4,000? None of us should ever despair that we will be lost because there's inadequacy in Jesus. Every time we come to him, he has the power to forgive and with power left over. If you're here this morning and you have not confessed your sins to Jesus, not come to him, not been baptized for the remission of them in the first place, don't despair. There is adequacy in Jesus. Power and power left over to save even the vilest of sinners, as the verse of the song we're about to sing suggests. If your subject is invitation, we encourage you to come as we stand and sing together.
Sinners, Jesus will receive. Sound this word of grace to all who the heavenly pathway leave. All who linger, all who fall, sing them all. Christ, receive the sin. and he will give you rest. Trust him, for his word is plain. He will take the sinfulness. Christ receive the sinful man. Sing them o'er and o'er again. Christ receive the sinful man. Make the message clear and plain. Christ receive the sinful man. Christ receive the sinful man. Even me with all my sin, purged from every spot and stain. Have with him I enter in. Sing them o'er and o'er again. Christ receive the sinful.